Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th of February, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And yes, you have one more day before you're in the doghouse for having forgotten Valentine's Day.
Although I think it's too late for overnight shipping.
Some
companies will deliver on Sunday for extra.
Talk about cutting it close, though.
Jeez. Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're going to talk this week about Google's new social media product called Buzz. It's meant to be part Facebook and part Twitter, allowing you to share links and images and keep your friends informed as to where you are and what you're doing. As with all hybrids, it does neither exceptionally, but does both fairly well for a first effort. Google's ambitions are huge. It looks to change social networking by integrating into services that Google enthusiasts already use, such as Gmail, Google Maps, and Google Profile. Interestingly, Google Buzz will occasionally pull in updates from outside your immediate group, such as an active conversation involving some friends and some people you aren't following. When you get a recommendation, Google Buzz tells you why. If you're not interested, say so. Google Buzz will learn your preferences over time. Taking a page from Twitter, Google Buzz lets you get someone's attention with the at symbol. Enter it and start typing a person's name to bring up an autocomplete list, just like the one in Gmail. Buzz updates with a symbol at automatically appear in that person's email inbox. On an Android, Symbian, or Windows mobile phone, Buzz will even geotag your updates, which I don't know if they're called buzzes yet. My friend Tom says that's not working correctly yet, and indeed he was at one place, and his geotag said he was somewhere else. Users of those phones can find Buzz updates in Google's mobile apps application. Clicking on those little speech bubbles brings up thoughts from anyone who's made their buzzes public in that area. Buzz still has problems. It's clearly very beta, although oddly it's one of the very few Google products not marked beta. So our question for you this week, I know we just had a social media poll, but we're going to have another one. And here it is. The question is, are you on Google Buzz? And the choices are, I'm buzzed, I've been thinking about it, and enough about social media already. So far, unsurprisingly, 83% of you think we've spoken enough about social media. Six of you are buzzed, and one of you is thinking about it. When you're done with that, of course, I know you aren't going to want to just be clicking on a little button. So underneath the poll, you will find a yellow box that says, give us your opinion. Click on that. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Where the question, of course, is why would you add yet one more social medium to your life? And you can tell us in 255 actually letters or fewer why you think that. And give us a call. Have you tried Buzz? What do you think? Our number 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. And the crowd loves it.
I found a website, I think we might have mentioned it last week, called Fail Booking.
Yeah.
Bad, inappropriate things people have put on Facebook without actually realizing what they're saying.
Right. Well, more importantly is the people who are having issues with Buzz, because Buzz automatically brings people in, whether you want them or not. So there was one woman who has her top three connections on Gmail were her boyfriend, her mother, and a very distant third, her abusive ex-husband. And suddenly, everything she was saying to the other two was being made public to him as well.
You know, sometimes they just carry things a little
And that goes back to
TMI.
That goes back to the tenet that don't say something on the internet you don't want the whole world to know about.
Well, mm-hmm. But the theory is these were private conversations, yeah. But now they're not anymore.
Hello, it's on a computer.
Well, you know what Google is really doing here?
No.
It's not how many people you follow or how many people follow you. It's who you stop following. Because now that this Google Buzz thing is out there, you're going to start weeding people out. You're going to start only listening to important, interesting conversations. So Google already knows who you have contacts, who the contacts are in your Gmail account, but they don't know what the quality of those is now. This is their way to find out the quality of those people. For example, I'm following Tim O'Reilly. I'm going to listen to dang near everything he says. I've got a bunch of people I'm following who do nothing but post news items I've already seen. I need to stop following them. Although Google stopped following some people on its own for me yesterday, some of whom I didn't want to stop following. So that was a little weird. I'm trying to get them all back again. so we'll see. We'll see how that all comes out.
And it's just another site to check. You know, if you got to check your Facebook, your MySpace, your Twitter, your Tumblr, your Buzz.
You know,
we need another aggregator.
Sorry, they won't be following me.
Yeah.
They don't tweet. I'm sorry.
Well, I do Twitter and I do Facebook, and I've played with
Buzz.
I
do the Facebook.
I've played with Buzz.
There was a Joy of Tech this week, yesterday. The current one, you know, complaining about Google Buzz, and guys finally tweets, goodbye Twitter, farewell Facebook, and the Buzz off Buzz, I'm over you all, two empty panels, and says, did anyone retweet that?
Yeah, right.
Goodbye all, but...
I'm one of those people who I don't entirely understand why anybody follows me on Twitter or Facebook or Buzz. I'm honored that they do. I just don't know why they do. But anyway, that's not important. What is important is we have John on the line. John, where are you calling from?
Calling out of Honey Lake Falls.
Where?
Honey Lake Falls.
Honey Lake Falls.
Yeah. Great show, guys. I appreciate the service that you offer through the show.
Thank you.
Tell a friend.
Tell an enemy. We don't care who. Just tell everybody.
We'll certainly do. Just want to explain briefly what I'm dealing with here, and then hopefully there's a solution out there. We've got 7 years of digital photos, and it eats up a ton of space on the hard drive. And every time you go to hard drives don't last that long. So one of my fears is losing the photos. But when the hard drive crashes or it fills up, it's time for an expansion. And I've dealt with that a couple times, and I keep putting the photos onto DVDs or CDs. And now I have the stockpile of that format, which I'm a little worried about how reliable that's going to be to retrieve it. And these are, you know, memorable photos that I don't want to lose.
Funny, so, we were just talking about that last night in Second Life.
There's really only one company that we know of. Normally, we don't mention companies, but there is only one company we know of that makes a preservation CD, a preservation quality CD. Kodak.
They have licensed it to other companies.
They have licensed it to other companies. KMP Media, for example, here in Rochester, is a distributor of this preservation DVD medium.
A lot of times they
say it'll last 100 years. Now, that still means you got to take care of it, but they say it'll last 100 years.
Yeah.
One question I have. Like I've tried a couple different formats, and right now I'm thinking maybe an external hard drive or an SSD I think might be a little bit more reliable. I've even tried online storage as a absolute backup fail-safe.
Until they fail and go out of business.
And that, you know what, I unfortunately shopped for the cheapest one, and I can't get any support, and now I'm afraid to actually store
You're on the right track. Having multiple different archive formats, hard drive, optical drive. Hard drives are susceptible to magnetic influence. So if you know there's a big magnet, you know when the nuclear pulse hits us, the magnets are gone. Optical discs have a limited capacity, but they're much sturdier to environmental causes or issues. So having several different formats is always a big key. Right now, there's a big problem in the National Archives that most of the data in the National Archives is on 9-track tape, and no one can find a 9-track tape player anymore.
Right.
So there's a big project going on now to transfer all of that over to something else so we don't lose all that information.
Is an SSD format something that you would be comfortable with for a little bit more secure?
It has the same problems that hard drives have,
yeah.
A limited life. And I would do what Steve says. You know, I keep my stuff online plus on a DVD, the preservation quality DVDs, plus an USB. External hard drive.
Yep.
And so that means I've got three shots at getting it right. But now what I have to remember is, at some point, my DVD player becomes obsolete, right? Nobody's going to be doing DVDs anymore.
Yep. I got a lot of stuff archived on SideQuest disk.
Right. Good luck getting those ever at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to be very careful to make sure that you maintain your entire backup on a medium that you know is current.
Yeah, every 5 years or so, you may
need
to change formats.
And how important it is to you, to what extent that you want to go to, and the due diligence you want to put behind it to, you know, keep those, photos.
Blu-ray has some current advantages. Blu-ray data disk is 50 gigabytes, so that exceeds the 8 gigabytes of a standard DVD. That's one of the reasons you can put HD movies on it. So that's got potential for storage. And I think I just read that they upped it to 70 gigabytes for the next format.
Right, but again, how long is that going to last?
Yeah, a Blu-ray burner is still a couple hundred dollars.
Right.
Yeah, so every 5 years or so, you may end up changing formats into whatever the current format is.
But if you pick an online vendor who you know is going to be around for a while, somebody along the lines of Amazon or Google, you can fairly safely say, yeah, they'll store my stuff and it'll always be there. You can always send it to Iron Mountain or one of those places.
Yep.
But they will charge you significant amounts of money. On the other hand, you seem very worried about these things, so you may find that paying that extra amount of money is well worth the cost.
Yep.
Okay, just a question on the preservation CD. Is that like an 8-gig storage, or is that a high-format medium?
Well, they make different versions.
They make regular CDs, which are 700 megs, and regular DVDs, which are 4.7 gigs. I'm pretty sure they do the double-layer DVDs,
sided,
too.
Double-sided, which is 8.2
or whatever, 8.4 or whatever it is, yeah. Okay. They're not cheap. The CDs are about $1, and the DVDs are about $4.
But it's the quality and how long they're going to last.
They're much higher quality. We actually had the president of KMP Media here at Soundbites a few years ago. And he was talking about the way CDs are made these days. Companies are trying to make them as thin as possible to get more CDs out of a plastic batch run. So they're too thin. The coatings on them are too thin to make them cheaper. So the data falls off, sometimes literally.
Or they shatter. If you want to hear an experience I've never heard ever again, was I literally had a client bring in their machine and a CD. They wanted me to load some software for it. It's some photos and all that type of stuff. Back it up. We put the CD in, and it sounded like that machine was ready to blow up.
That was one of the early...
It just shattered, and the noise in it. Yep. A couple pieces came spitting out.
Yep.
And
that was one of the early Mythbusters episodes when they did this shattering CD. A 50X Reed CD player spins at 30,000 RPMs.
Right.
Any tiny defect in the disc, and it can shatter.
Well, more importantly, for example, I give a lot of CDs out to people who want to try Linux. And I know that they're not going to keep those forever, so I use really cheap CDs for that.
Naturally.
And I write on them, I write on them with a Sharpie, which you're not supposed to do because that eats through the thing.
The acetone. If it smells good, don't use it.
Right. But I know that these aren't going to last. People aren't going to use these for long, so I don't mind that. I don't care. And I actually picked one up and turned it over. I could read my label through the back. That's how thin this thing was. It was dang near transparent, or at least translucent. And so I know that that's not a good CD, and I know it's not going to last. But I don't care because I'm giving it to somebody to try Linux. That once it's on their machine, they don't really need that DVD again. If they do, it's free. They can download it.
Well, I one time went looking after I had this one explode, wondering how common this is. And I found on one of the sites, they had a picture. And evidently the father, the story goes, the father had the computer up on the desk. And the son didn't like it because he wanted to have his controller and all that up. So they moved it down below. And the father's glad that they did it. Because they had one of these CD that you don't put it in a tray. You just
Like
put
you
it
have
in,
on Macs.
And it grabs it and sucks it on in. Well, this thing exploded. It came out through that slot, and they showed a picture of part of the CD stuck in the wall.
Yep.
If it had been up on the desk, and the angle it was, it would have been in the kid's head.
Yep. Yep.
Tiny shards of plastic coming out at 100 miles an hour.
Scary.
So, yeah, at any rate, John, here's the deal. You can't trust CDs or DVDs unless they're of preservation quality. When you store them flat, because otherwise they warp. And store them in a cool, dry place with not a lot of sunlight.
And be careful about temperature extremes.
Right.
We used to have problems in college with floppy disks. Kids walking from the dorm to the computer lab in the winter here in Rochester.
They'd freeze.
They'd freeze. They'd stick them right in and they'd shatter.
Yep.
So let them warm up for an hour first.
Yep. And if you really want to be sure, every few years, change the media. Well, with the KMP disks, the preservation disks, you don't have to do that. Those are supposed to last 100 years, but in 50 years, I'd make a change. You'll want to anyway. The very last drive, the last DVD drive you ever own, you're going to want to pull all those things in. Listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is Saturday, the 13th of February, one day to Valentine's Day, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit, host of The Smart Set. Friends, we get dozens of requests on The Smart Set, but we come back each week anyway, broadcasting live from Rochester's hottest night spots. The Cowtow Room, the Foaming Bulldog, the Bar None Saloon, the Blue Buddha Lounge. Anywhere the best bands in the biz are belting out the tunes Dance Mad Bob's Love. And what bands? The Royal Crown Review, Lee Presson and the Nails, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Lav A. Smith and a Red Hot Skillet Liquors. And of course, His Highness of Heidi Ho, Rochester Zone, Cab Calloway. Experience it all in the relative safety and comfort of your own home every Saturday night from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
When you underwrite the programming of Jazz 90.1, you make your business known to people who enjoy jazz as much as you do. Your on-air message is short and tasteful, making it easy to remember, with basic information about your business, including how to reach you. Underwriting is economical, too. To find out more about underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and the Incredibly Edible Cookie Company. The Incredibly Edible Cookie Company, located in Rochester, New York, is an artisan bakery that uses fresh ingredients in all their products. They feature chocolate coconut blizzards, ooey gooey quads, three varieties of hot chocolate, decadent chocolate enrobed brownies, and a chocolate bark that may be customized to your taste. Tea time confections, brownies, handmade chocolates, and favors are available for any special event. For more information, you may visit www.iecc-cookie.com.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Love & Cup Bistro & Brews. Love & Cup will be featuring a Valentine's weekend. Love the one you're with at the Love & Cup on Saturday, February 13th and Sunday, February 14th. There will be a five-course gourmet dinner with several courses and a dessert trio. Chocolates by Hedonist Artisan Chocolates. The Rick Holland Quartet will perform on February 13th and the Rick Holland Little Big Band on February 14th. For more information, you may visit www.loveandcup.com or call 585-292-9940.
Hi, I'm Linda Wildman. Please join me middays, 10 to noon on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, before we get to the next call, I have to read this news item. Google has announced plans to test ultra-fast gigabit broadband in limited markets. However, that doesn't mean Google is entering yet another highly competitive industry, at least not yet. The intended audiences for the tests are broadband providers and their subscribers. The goal is for Google to demonstrate that it is what is possible. by choosing some test markets and implementing broadband's 100 times faster than that being delivered by most broadband providers currently, Google can prove that it's possible and back it up with real-world results and project costs. In theory, broadband providers are already aware of what is possible, but broadband providers are interested in what's profitable more than what's possible. At the end of the day, Comcast and AT&T executives answer to shareholders more than customers, and they don't answer to Google at all. As it is, most broadband providers don't just deliver the fastest possible speeds to all customers. Each offers a range of service plans with varying download and upload speeds that all work over the same wires with the same hardware. If you want the maximum speed, you're going to have to pay a lot for that maximum speed. Comcast has already pushed its maximum broadband speed from 1.5 megabits per second in 2002 to 50 megabits per second in most markets today. Yes, 50 megabits. A recent Comcast blog posts detailed plans to implement new Xfinity technology that will raise the maximum speed to 100 megabits per second or higher. Of course, even if Comcast doubles its current speed and implements Xfinity, it will still only be delivering one-tenth of the broadband speed proposed by Google. There is also the because Google, in case I didn't actually mention it, is talking about one gigabit to your home. Yeah, tell me about it. Of course, that's not as big a deal as it sounds, since most people rely on 100 megabit Ethernet and the more common 802.11g wireless, which is only 54 megabits inside the home. So if data maxes out at 54 megabits inside your network, the benefits of a broadband pipeline that's 20 times that bandwidth will be a little...
And we've said that. It doesn't matter how fast your internal network is, because it's slower than the internet. Yeah. As soon as that starts changing, we'll get faster internal networks.
Well, the minute you get out of your area, you know, the minute you leave your D-SLAM, you're in out to the internet. That's why a lot of folks get confused. They think, well, I'm just connecting over to this site, and they're just over on the other side of town. If the folks actually saw the routing, you know, you try to explain to them. No, just because they're across the town doesn't mean that their website is just across the town.
Right.
You might have to bounce down to here to go up to here to go over to here to get it. Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah. Also, Google's not doing this out of pure altruism. You know what? The faster you can get from web page to web page and from YouTube video to YouTube video, the more ad revenue Google can generate. Regardless of the motives, faster broadband speeds are necessary. By proving that it's possible to cost-effectively deploy gigabit broadband and demonstrating the potential users of that mind-blowing speed, Google will uncork the genie for customers and alter the broadband landscape. So our question for you, is your internet access fast enough? Would you like gigabit Ethernet to your house? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or 1-800-790-0415.
And as reported on Stop the Cap this morning, Frontier, Rochester's local telephone company, and apparently the owner of a lot of fiber already in Rochester that isn't being used, has said that most users don't need ultra-fast internet access and that Google has a poor track record of following through on their proposals.
They're worried.
I don't care if I need it. I want it.
Right. Need and want are two different things. That's exactly right. But most people don't really care because they just do their email.
Right. But as
you know, and there are a lot of people like that, and God bless each and every one of them. There are those of us who would be willing to pay for gigabit.
And as online video gets more and more popular with websites like Hulu, and actually Frontier just opened their own online video website. Can't remember the name of it. I just got an email yesterday.
There you go.
To watch TV shows on the internet. You need high speed for that.
Yeah, and as long as they're not going to ding you for every darn...
Yeah, that's the other thing. We want it fast. We don't want a bandwidth cap.
Yeah, I mean, hello. Third world countries have faster speed than we do and dirt cheap.
Yep.
It's only because we're in the U.S.
Well, what happened was we put ours in first.
100 years ago.
100 years ago, and so there's still a lot of that. There's still a lot of that stuff that's out there, that hardware, and replacing all that hardware is ridiculously expensive. It's actually more expensive to replace it than it is to just put it in new, because you've got to deal with getting the old out and changing things and doing all of that stuff. So whereas countries who are late to the game actually enjoy an advantage.
Mm-hmm. And Frontiers, Aaron Burr, told Rochester DNC that if Google builds its own network, they estimate it's going to be $5,000 per household. And that seems to be very exaggerated because, according to Verizon, who does do fiber to the home, their target for 2010 was to be $700 per home connection cost, and they're doing it for $650 per target home, significantly less than what Frontier said would be $5,000 per household.
And it would be really nice if we got that because we are a very high-tech city. Here in Rochester. Now I realize we got people listening from all over the world. God bless each and every one of you. We get people who download our podcast from Russia and Germany and Norway, Latvia, you know who you are, Finland. We have one person in Latvia. One. Just one.
Well,
whoever you are in Latvia, tell everybody, all your English-speaking friends, they need to be downloading this show and listening to it.
Well, my friend Lukey over in England. I mean, he downloads a podcast, and he plays it now for some of the other folks. And they're enjoying it. So I think we got more folks over there now listening to it because they didn't know we existed. It's like, whoa, this is way cool. I learned a lot.
Here it is. MyFiTV.com is Frontier's television website they just started.
I think
recently.
That's great. I think that's absolutely great.
So now we need gigabit downloads.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you're on DSL and you're getting 6-7 megabits per second down, mm-hmm. that's more than enough to view video because you don't share that with anybody.
Right.
You know, if you're a Frontier user, if you're a Time Warner user, every connection gets shared at some point. I mean, that's simply fact. The cable providers you share at the head end, which is in your neighborhood, and then you run from there to aggregator, but that head end, I used to be on Time Warner, and there were times in the day when I had very, very lousy connections because, you know, there were 100 kids in my neighborhood all downloading the latest broken piece of software. Whereas I'm on DSL now, and I don't share that connection with anybody outside my home. From me to the central office, which, as we all know, is neither central nor an office. But nobody shares that with me. So although I only get 6 megabits per second, I don't share it with anybody. So it's faster, actually, than my original connection used to be. And that's just the way the world works sometimes. So maybe, Sal, I'll try it when I get home. That maybe 6 megabits is good enough for that. I'd still rather have gigabit.
Yeah, then SD's not enough. We want full screen HD, so we need even faster. Now, and then there was a lot of talk at CES about Blu-ray over the internet, and people aren't really jumping on Blu-ray as much as the association would hope already.
Nobody gets Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And people don't get the concept.
If you got a 50-inch TV, you'll notice the difference on high-end video. But there's some PCs that have Blu-ray players built into their 15-inch screen.
Yeah, right.
Why?
Right.
Yeah, well, because it's a feature on the feature checkbox.
Right. Exactly. All right. We have time to go to the phone. Where our next caller is Jim. Where are you calling from, Jim?
Nashua, New Hampshire.
Nashua, New Hampshire. And what can we do for you in New Hampshire?
Okay. I was on Second Life last night about the iPod. You remember that was the first question.
Oh, yeah, that
absolutely.
It synced your photos and it wiped your music.
Yeah, this time I did it this morning and put all my music on, 2002 songs, and then I did the photos. I did the photos okay, 5,800 photos. Most, they're all off the internet, and it did it okay this time. What I was thinking is that the one I originally did it on, the iTunes, was about three or four versions back. That might have been the problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
That could have been, yeah.
All right, here's for those of you who weren't in Second Life last night, and I don't know why you weren't, Jim was talking about having his iPod. He had put all his music on, And then he put all his photos on, and they wiped out all his music. And now he tried it again today, and it worked fine. And so what you're saying is it may have been an older version of iTunes.
Yeah, it had to be. Because this morning, I thought I had the latest version from about 7 months ago and downloaded a new version of iTunes.
Right.
This morning.
So what likely happened was your iPod was on the latest version of the iPod software, but your iTunes was several versions back. And they're not as compatible as as one might have hoped.
Oops.
But when it put it initially put it in, it downloaded the newest version of iTunes then. So it was okay then when I first bought it. But I guess that version of iTunes wasn't as great as the latest version that's out.
And when you've updated your iTunes, it should have basically brought your music in and updated your library to be compatible with the new version of iTunes that you just installed.
Yeah, it resynced everything.
Yeah, the first time you launch the new version of iTunes after an update, you may see a box going by real quick, updating library.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm glad you solved that little problem, Jim.
Yeah, just a couple more things for you real quick.
Sure.
When I was living in Westbrook, Maine, I had Roadrunner, and they were offering 2 gig speed then. This is about a little over a year ago.
Right.
They were doing 2 gigs then.
Really?
And, yeah.
2 gigs or two megs?
For internet speed. I remember seeing the advertisements for it.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So...
That's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, 2 gigabytes. That's darn good.
Yeah.
What kind of pricing did they have, reasonable?
Maybe 60 or 80 bucks a month for that.
That's
something
reasonable.
Like that.
I'd pay that.
Yeah, for that kind of speed.
I think the fastest I've heard around the net now is Cablevision in New York is doing 100 megabit for 100 bucks a month.
Right.
And you're saying they're doing 2,000 megabit? That's amazing.
Yeah, they were doing that. But I got another question for you, Steve. This will be my last one. And that is, on the iTunes, I have to put some music on because it didn't take all of my music from my library. Is there a way I can get it to work something like Windows Media Player where I can just click on, say, for the Jenner and do all of the lines at once for the whole album instead of doing one line at a time?
Well, you should be able to click the checkbox next to any playlist you have or next to any genre you have when you're setting the iPod to tell it what to sync.
No, I'm trying to put it on iTunes before I put it on the iPod.
So you've got it on a CD.
Right.
You want to put it into it should pull the whole. I mean, you should be able to put the CD in
and click import, and it imports all the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't have an iTunes account.
You don't need an iTunes account.
It's telling me I do.
You need an iTunes account if you want it to download the track titles. But if you just want to rip the songs, you don't need an iTunes account.
Yeah, but I'm talking about putting the titles in.
Right. Then
you have to do it by hand if you don't get an iTunes account.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Doing it by hand.
Well, actually, no. You don't need an iTunes account for the album art. It'll download the track titles without an iTunes account. But you click on each song and type in the information you want.
Yeah, but I have to do it line by line then. I can't just...
Right, because every song is different. Every line is different.
If you have an iTunes account, it will happen automatically. Otherwise, you have to do it by hand.
Yeah, well, what I mean is I put in the song titles for, say, 10 songs on the album. Then when I put the genre in, I can't just do all of them at the same time.
Sure, you can. Just select them all.
I don't know how to do that. I tried it. The last time I tried it, I couldn't do it.
You click
on the first one and shift-click on the last one. That will do a contiguous range. It works exactly the way it does under Windows. Or you can command-click on individual tracks to do a discontiguous selection. Or you can hit Command-A, which in almost every program does a select all.
Oh, okay. That might have to do the Command-A then.
Yep. Yeah, it works the same way it does in Windows. Click and shift-click, or command-click. Windows uses the control key, and Mac uses the command key.
Or the splat key.
Windows, I just right-click and get them all that way, but that's, and I'll select all, do it that way, but that don't work on that.
Select all will work. Yeah. If you do the splat A, it'll work.
Or right-click and select all, yeah.
I tried to right-click and I didn't do it, but oh, well. I'll give her a try.
All right, thanks, Jim.
It does it on mine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thanks. It depends on where you're right-clicking. You have to right-click on one of the songs.
Right.
Right. So if you right-click on one of the actual songs, there should be a choice in the menu for select all. But it's still, even if you look at it, it says splat A. So,
yeah.
Excuse me, command A. When did they stop using splat?
Well, some of the new keyboards, they actually have the word command on them. It used to be an Apple key. In the old Apple II days, it was an open Apple.
It was open Apple, closed Apple.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it used a little squiggly thing that some people called splat or propeller or
flower.
Flower. And it was for the command key equivalent, so you can do a keyboard command to invoke a menu command. And now the Apple has started putting the word command on the keyboards.
Apple is getting way too corporate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. They're just getting way too corporate. All right. But, yeah, we see that is a problem sometimes. We find that people have it's not just the clicking. It's where you click. You have to click actually right on a song, a right click right on a song in order to get that drop down menu. All right, we're going to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. More sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here's another I Love New York travel tip.
Art lovers, step out of the cold and into one of the fascinating exhibitions taking place now in New York State. In Glens Falls, see a testament to the enduring legacy of Impressionist painting in American art at the Hyde Museum exhibition, American Impressionist Landscapes from the Thomas Clark Collection. In Manhattan, the Metropolitan Museum of Art's first ever exhibition, dedicated to Agnolo Bronzino, features nearly all of the known drawings by or attributed to this leading Italian Mannerist artist. And at the Corning Museum of Glass, Tiffany Treasures showcases nearly 60 hand-wrought pieces designed by artist Louis Comfort Tiffany.
For more information or to learn about other New York State travel opportunities, visit the I Love New York website at iloveny.com.
World-class art. Another reason I love New York.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Love & Cup Bistro & Brews. Love & Cup will be featuring a Valentine's weekend. Love the one you're with at the Love & Cup on Saturday, February 13th and Sunday, February 14th. There will be a 5-course gourmet dinner with several courses and a dessert trio. Chocolates by Hedonist Artisan Chocolates. The Rick Holland Quartet will perform on February 13th and the Rick Holland Little Big Band on February 14th. For more information, you may visit www.loveandcup.com or call 585-292-9940.
Here's a tip to the wise for all you tech-savvy scenesters. One click will take you directly from the Jazz 90.1 website straight to the station's very popular Facebook and MySpace pages. Once there, you'll be privy to special announcements, exclusive contests, Jazz Insider info, everything to keep you hip to all the hip happenings at Jazz 90.1. So click on over to jazz901.org and help take Jazz even further.
Businesses benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1. Not only do you reach about 20,000 listeners a week, that includes listeners who only listen to jazz. In addition to being beneficial, underwriting Jazz 90.1 is very affordable. To find out how your business can benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
Jazz 90.1 apparel is available online. Whether it's a long or short sleeve t-shirt, half zip fleece, hooded sweatshirt, or baseball cap that you're looking for, you'll find it at the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. For those of you who, and you know who you are, have illegal copies of Windows 7, you need to listen carefully to this next story. Microsoft will soon feed Windows 7 users an update that detects illegal copies installed using more than 70 different activation cracks. The update to Windows Active Technologies, the anti-piracy software formerly known as Windows Genuine Advantage, will be posted to Microsoft's download site on February 17th and offers an optional upgrade via Windows Updater later this month, where it will be tagged as important. Out of the gate, the update will reach Windows 7 Home, Premium, Professional, Ultimate, and Enterprise users, said Joe Williams, the general manager of Microsoft's Activation and Anti-Counterfeit Unit. I'd like to stress that the update is voluntary, which means that you can choose not to install it when you see it appear on Windows Update. That's counter to the practice Microsoft used in 2006, where it force-fed Windows XP customers a Windows Genuine Advantage update by labeling it as a high-priority security update. Several users sued Microsoft over that behavior. I will sue. The lawsuit was officially dismissed just last week. Since then, the company's anti-piracy software updates have been less aggressive. According to Williams, the update sniffs out more than 70 activation exploits, Microsoft's term for what others call cracks, that sidestep the production the product activation process or use stolen keys to illegally activate counterfeit copies of Windows 7. After the update has been installed, PCs running cracked copies will begin displaying a black background and the usual gamut of nagging notifications that mark the operating system as bogus. Machines running genuine Windows 7 software with no activation exploits will see nothing, promises Williams. Microsoft regularly refreshes its anti-piracy technology to identify new activation exploits. It did the same 2 years ago with a Vista crackdown. But the number of exploit signatures in the upcoming WAT update is magnitudes larger than anything previous. There's a bunch of them out there, and it's trying to hit all the big ones, I guess. Williams also noted the update will periodically phone home to Microsoft servers to revalidate the copy of Windows 7 as legit and use those opportunities to update activation signatures to detect even newer cracks. Initially, the Windows activation technologies will connect to Microsoft servers every 90 days. Is your copy of Windows legit? Give us a call, but don't tell us whether or not. Don't tell us if it isn't. 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0400.
And how many people now are going to, with legitimate copies of Windows, get this error message and their Windows will stop working? Doesn't that happen all the time?
Yeah, really.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Don. Where are you calling from, Don?
Webster.
Webster, New York, and what can we do to make your life worth living?
Okay, I installed a Logitech webcam.
Yep.
It works great. The problem I have is with the when that is plugged into my computer, my printer won't work. It says one of the USB devices attached to this computer has malfunctioned, and Windows does not recognize it. If I unplug the webcam, printer works great. I'm running XP, and I have a Hewlett-Packard printer.
Yes. Some USB devices don't get along with each other.
Oh.
What you might be able to do is if you can figure it out in your computer, a lot of times there are several different USB controllers. Sometimes the front USB ports are on a different controller than the back USB ports, or side-by-sides there might be different controllers. So if you can plug each device into a separate controller, that may help it to work as well.
Yeah, I tried switching everything around and still don't work.
Yeah, there's no real answer for that. The reality is that there are simply devices that don't work with each other.
Yeah, because we got the – matter of fact, it's what we're using here in the studio is a Logitech cam.
But I don't have a printer connected at the moment.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I'm looking a printer up to see if it works.
Yeah. You can try other drivers. for the printer and the camera. So that's about all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Plug the printer into another computer and share it to your network.
Yeah. Buy a second USB port for $10-15.
Yeah,
that could be too. Yeah,
that might work.
Could you put another cord on and just unplug that cord, or would a longer cord?
Well, longer cords generally have trouble. If we ran into that here in the studio with our camera, we had to get an active extension cord that can add power to the signal.
Oh, okay.
But they're hot swappable, so if you don't need to print from your camera, you can just unplug one and plug the other one in while you need each one.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
That's a pain, but there's also peripheral.
But it works good.
Yeah.
We've been pretty pleased with it. I mean, folks have been able to watch us here in the studio if they want a real good scare. You know, we always say, we have faces for radio, but to see us actually moving around in the studio.
Well, it's always the back of your head, too, Dave, because the camera's behind you.
That's my best side.
I do suspect, Don, that if you were to buy a second USB card and plug it in, that you could then plug one device into that card, the other device into the other card.
Although, you know,
and that should solve the problem.
Come to think of it, I just had a client, matter of fact, Laurel Ann, working with Laurel Ann, they had a signature pad, a camera, and the two of them were conflicting. Because they had they had this little webcam on there that they wanted to take a patient's photos so they could attach it to their records. And they also had the signature pad. And it was when we went to put in the signature pad that everything went wonky, and they had to undo.
That's a technical term.
Yes. And do something with, I think it was updated software for the camera. So you might want to double check to make sure if there's any updates for the camera.
What kind of printer do you have?
Or maybe down dates.
Hewlett Packard.
I knew you were going to say that. That's another problem. Hewlett Packard makes terrific hardware and the worst software I've ever used in my entire life.
And it takes a lifetime to load.
Oh, I hate install. I hate HP software.
Yeah, it's a 100 meg download, no matter what you do, about.
Well, not even just the download. Just watching an all-in-one.
Yeah.
Just to install the software can take 10 to 15 minutes watching those bars go across. Yeah.
So what I might suggest is actually what we already suggested, what Dave already suggested is, and Steve, go and see if there are newer drivers for your devices.
Okay.
It may well be that they know about this problem and have, in fact, fixed it, because neither Logitech nor HP is a rare find on people's computers, so they may have already solved this problem.
Okay, I can do that.
Okie doke.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Don.
Another thing, too, just in case, if he has updated his printer, we've seen this a lot with HP printers. If you go from one model to another model, the drivers between them will fight each other. So a lot of times you have to uninstall all of the old HP drivers to install your new HP printer, which is always very frustrating.
Right. All right, on to our next caller, Bodan.
Gentlemen, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Bodan. You're calling from Rochester, right?
Yes, I am. Listen, let me just update you in regards to last week's question that I called in about. It was about the Buffalo Airport's website and in the arrival and departures board not showing up the airline name and the logo. Well, I actually emailed them, and they responded. And in a nutshell, they said, "Hi, our website has just transitioned over to a new server, and so we are working to get it back up to speed. Thanks for the observations. Sorry about the confusion. You should start to see improvements soon."
Wow.
And I went to that site today using Firefox, and it works.
Oh, so bravo, Buffalo.
Because I remember last week you guys were actually making a comment saying, why would a static logo be in the Flash format?
Exactly.
Today it's in the GIF image.
Bravo,
nice.
Buffalo.
Nice.
Somebody figured it out.
Bravo, Buffalo Airport. Well done.
So maybe I had a little influence on changing their website.
Clearly you
cool.
did.
Yep.
Well done, Buffalo Airport.
Now, gentlemen, I have another issue. Since you did mention, Nick, that you do participate in Facebook, so do I.
I do.
Occasionally, I try to save a picture that gets posted on either my page or a friend of mine's page, and I right-click and I save the picture. And when I do that, I'm having an issue, and it's a JPEG image. I verify the properties, and I'm using the Windows Picture and Fax Viewer. And, for example, I put it in my folder where my pictures are, And I do see an image, what I call the generic Microsoft, scenic, looks like a ocean view with the orange and the red line going across horizontally. The issue is that when I double-click on that, which I just saved, no preview available. And I was thinking, well, maybe something's with that particular image. At work, I did the same thing, and it works at my other computer at work. So what could be causing this no preview available? Doesn't show up, but it shows up as something being there.
Well, but it doesn't recognize it as a picture.
Yeah.
So you may have downloaded it in a format that the Microsoft Picture Viewer doesn't understand.
Well, when I right click on it and go to Properties, type of file JPEG opens with Windows Picture and Fax Viewer.
Well, that could only mean it looked at the extension, which is .jpg, and so it thinks it's a JPEG. It may be a newer version of the JPEG format than this viewer can understand. I've also run into problems sometimes when I try downloading pictures like that. I won't get the picture downloaded. I'll get the HTML code to download the picture downloaded.
Yep.
So is there anything I can adjust on my end to correct this or what?
Sometimes what works is rather than right-clicking on it, just drag it to the desktop. Grab the picture and drag it to the desktop, and that may work.
All right, I'll try that then. Okay. I just found it peculiar. Well, so again, I understand what you're saying, that it thinks it's a JPEG where it may be something a little different.
Are these pictures that someone else uploaded?
Correct.
Yeah, so that could be whatever format they used, or they used a different compression algorithm. I see that a lot with videos I download, that they'll use a weird video compression format or a weird audio compression format, and you have to download different players.
Okay, so it's nothing on my computer. I was concerned that maybe I had unchecked or checked something where the preview wasn't working, and I went into the help topics of the Windows Picture and Fax Viewer, and I really couldn't find anything to adjust or correct.
Yeah, it's probably nothing at your end. You can try a different picture viewer. We like, what is it, Irfan View.
Irfan View is excellent.
Okay, that's a program to download first?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a picture viewer that can read a lot of different picture formats.
Okay.
I still like Picasa.
Picasa?
Picasa 3.
Yeah, okay. Google Picasa is an image editing program that can also open a lot of different formats.
And you can do slideshows, and I mean, you can organize things. It's really a cool product.
I'll look into that,
and it's
Dave.
A freebie, yeah.
So anyway, sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun today.
Oh, we are.
We always do.
You know, any day that we can be here and, you know, be with our folks, you know, all across the country. What, we had the one from New Hampshire. Literally, our listeners are really getting out there. The word is getting back out that we're back on the air thanks to Rob and his crew. You know, it's just fantastic. We're having a lot of fun.
Now, Dave, is there any truth to the rumor that Nick Francesco and Rob Litton dance polkas before you guys go onto the studio and start your computer show?
We're here, Dan. Don't you see us on
the way? It's very disturbing when that polka music is playing. We all have to dance. We can't stop it.
Yeah. And something about thinking about the Schmengi brothers.
The Schmengis. Exactly. I do not play an accordion. I just need you to know. I used to play the banjo back before the arthritis got me.
Someday I'll bring over some cabbage rolls and coffee.
Yes, indeed. All righty, Bodan.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
I do like the polka music. I like listening to it. Well, for those of you who don't listen in ahead of time, and I don't know why you don't, there's polka music ahead of us, German music behind us here in the middle. Most days they do jazz, but on weekends they do additional shows as well.
Well, Thursday night, my wife and I had the pleasure of sitting in for Laurel Land.
And you'll be doing that again for a while.
And this Thursday night, helping out. I'll tell you, I'm having more fun picking out some of this jazz. I mean, that library is so extensive. I mean, for folks to sit there, I don't know about jazz. No, what they play here at this station is unbelievable, folks. They got great selection and literally having a ball with it. So, you know, it's cool. You got to really listen to it during the week and have a lot of fun with it because a good variety. And now they're doing these minuets on Black History Month.
And, of course, there are only a handful of jazz stations.
Yeah, what, I think nine
left in the country. I thought it was eight now. But
could be, yeah.
There's only a handful, not even a double handful. And we have one, and that's a point of pride for this community. And you folks, God love you. Many of you have joined, become members. We are member-supported. The only way that we stay here is with your help, and we're very grateful. And we found a home here, and we hope to maintain this home for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, because I constantly keep getting folks coming in the shop and saying, well, when are you coming back on the air?
I told you, I had a guy a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Say, too bad you guys aren't in the air anymore. So we're on Jazz 90.1. He said, what station is that? I said, I said we're on WGMC. I don't know why I said that. Well, where is this? Jazz 90.1. He said, oh, that's the polka people. I listen to that show all the time. I said, well, didn't you think to leave the radio on for a minute afterwards? You'd hear us come on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's always the toughest thing. As a matter of fact, there was one of the blogs there that I sent you guys. You know, did they leave? And we go, yep. And we're just trying to get the word out and, you know, let folks know that. So that's why we keep telling our listeners that. Tell a friend. Tell a friend that, you
know. Tell 10 friends.
Yeah. There you go.
Absolutely. People will be happy to know that we are back on the air. And we are on the air. We are right here with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Join us. Stay with us. Tell all your friends. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. I think I mentioned that already. See you on the other side.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Love & Cup Bistro & Brews. Love & Cup will be featuring a Valentine's weekend. Love the one you're with at the Love & Cup on Saturday, February 13th and Sunday, February 14th. There will be a 5-course gourmet dinner with several courses and a dessert trio. Chocolates by Hedonist Artisan Chocolates. The Rick Holland Quartet will perform on February 13th and the Rick Holland Little Big Band on February 14th. For more information, you may visit www.loveandcup.com or call 585-292-9940.
Supporting Jazz 90.1 is as simple as 1, 2, 3. 1. Decide how much listening to Jazz 90.1 is worth to you, considering the great jazz music, live DJs, live jazz information, local traffic and weather. 2. Call 966-5299 or visit jazz901.org and make a pledge. 3. Sit back and enjoy the good feeling you get from keeping jazz on the radio, alive and well in Rochester on Jazz 90.1.
My daughter Cara came back from Iraq a few weeks ago. I'm so proud of her. She served and came back in one piece. But something was off. She was different. Distant. My wife told me not to push the issue, but I'm her dad.
You may not know what to say, but we can help start the conversation. Visit supportyourvet.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
In celebration of Black History Month 2010, Jazz 90.1 proudly salutes African-American jazz musicians. Throughout the month of February, we will present biographical vignettes of great jazz and blues artists like Alan Toussaint, John Coltrane, Wynton Marsalis, Nancy Wilson, and Roy Hargrove. Be listening each weekday at 7:40 a.m., 12:40, 4:40, and 8:40 p.m. when Jazz 90.1 will honor a different African-American jazz musician. For a complete listing of artists featured, visit jazz901.org. African-American jazz vignettes are presented as a public service by Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are back to the phones, and we have Patty on the line. Where are you calling from, Patty?
Hi, guys. I'm calling from Rochester.
Uh-huh. And what can we do to make you a happier person?
Well, I probably should just ask for the address of your repair shop, but I've been trying to recover a Toshiba satellite laptop. It's relatively new. My girlfriend got it for Christmas. Bad guys had taken over her computer. She was surfing unprotected, and so I'm trying to
bad.
Help by restoring, you know, doing the recovery. We couldn't even get to the point where we could create a set of recovery disks before we did this.
Yep.
She hadn't done that when it was new, so we kind of just went in with our fingers crossed. And during the recovery process, it seemed to freeze up after several hours of waiting, so I canceled it. And now what's happening is it's telling me the Windows Boot Manager. I did download an ISO torrent, which allowed me to boot from a CD so that I could at least get to that little recovery window. And tried to do a system repair, and I got all these nasty messages, and it says Windows failed to start. Mm-hmm. A recent hardware or software change might be the cause. To fix the problem, insert your Windows installation disk. And, of course, we don't have one.
Yep.
I'm willing to buy one. I don't want to have to wait. If I were to bring this in to a repair shop such as yours today, do they have a way to do that right there on the spot?
Well, no.
Do you have the Windows?
Patty, anybody who's a good repair shop probably can't do it on the spot because there's like a million people ahead of you.
Yeah, and well, here's the other thing. One, that hard drive has to we were talking about this last night in Second Life. But basically what has to happen, because I'm seeing a lot of it. I've got my, you know, the line shelf is lined with a bunch of these right now, current virus that's going around. It's giving you these errors. And basically what we have to do is take the hard drive out of the machine, put it on our test bench, and clean it up that way to get it at least booting into Windows for you. And then from there, we can go ahead, do the repair, get it back up, get it running. And then from that point, you'll then have the tools available to then make your restore CDs.
Okay. When I get into the command prompt, I can see, it won't even recognize that there's a C drive, but there is an X drive, and that's where there's a bunch of Windows files. So I believe it's still in there somewhere, and I don't know whether this was caused by the bad guys or by me canceling halfway through the recovery process.
If you waited for hours before you canceled the recovery, something went wrong during the recovery.
Yeah, because that should have only taken a few minutes.
Yeah, it likely wasn't your fault.
Yeah.
Do you? Does the computer have its Windows product key sticker on the side? Because that's almost more important than a physical disk.
On the laptop, it's on the bottom.
On the bottom. And I hate that on laptops because they get worn off for sliding the laptop around.
Well, the other thing is...
It's here.
Yeah. Yep. And the fun of it is you got to turn the laptop on its side because as you're putting the key in, you got to look around the back, write down the code, come around to the front. Usually Dan and I will team up. I'll read the code and he types it in on it sideways.
You could turn it upside down and write it down and then turn it right side up and then type it in.
Yeah, if you were to actually write it down before you turn the machine on, you could leave the lid closed, Dave.
Nah,
write the actual number down and then have it handy.
That's an analog feature. We're digital guys.
We're digital. Dan and I work as a team. We're a good oil team.
We don't think ahead.
So you don't think if I had a Windows installation disk that would help? I'm beyond that?
You're beyond that.
Well,
likely.
Yeah. Likely. Yeah. What you could do is if there's nothing important on the computer, you could erase it and start over.
Well, I can't even do that. There is nothing important on the
computer.
Well,
she doesn't have the CD.
Never made it. So you could buy a generic Windows disk.
Not really.
And then you run into driver problems.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Your best bet is to
take it
to somebody like Dave.
Wow.
Yeah.
You'll have to leave it.
A lot of times if you call the manufacturer, they will sell you recovery disks. and then they come in the mail.
That is the same thing as a Windows installation disk?
Not always. Sometimes the recovery disks, what they do is erase the hard drive and restore it as if it just came from the factory.
Okay.
Sometimes recovery disks are a Windows install disk and a driver disk for that model.
Okay.
It depends on the manufacturer.
I guess I'm not really sure what I created last night. When I downloaded this ISO file, this torrent, and burned it to a CD, it was from NeoSmart or something?
Yeah, it's probably a Linux boot disk for diagnostic tools for mm-hmm. people that
yeah,
right. know what they're doing.
Which
yeah.
is not me.
Yep.
No, your best bet at this point, Patty, is to take it to a reputable dealer like Dave or Steve. Let them do their magic. It'll take a day or so, but they'll get to it, and they'll make it right.
Okay.
And then the first thing you do when you get it back is what?
Make a set of recovery disks.
Well done.
Well, that's one thing we do for folks, because they don't know. A lot of folks don't know enough to do that.
Yeah.
Or they'll get to it later.
Yeah, because most of the time, the computers some PCs will come with a hidden partition that has the recovery on it, which is great unless the hard drive fails, and then that's gone too. But most of those computers will pop up a message when you first turn it on. Do you want to make your recovery disks now? And everyone says no, and it never prompts them again.
Right.
Well, and also, the recovery CDs are I don't know. It seems to me that not enough people make them. They're only saving on like a nickel by not sending it out with them. I hate that.
Yeah, but multiplied by 100 million computers.
I understand that. It's still, it's chintzy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Thanks for your help.
Thank you. And then you will also make sure that your friend gets antivirus protection on that machine.
Yep. Antivirus, anti-malware.
Right.
Yep.
All of that stuff has to be on there. And let
or,
this be a cautionary.
How about instead of restoring Windows, just install Linux?
Install Linux and make it easy. let this be a cautionary tale to all those of you out there who are riding bareback right now and have not made your backup CDs, your recovery CDs. Take the hour right now that it'll take to do both of those things. Get your machine cleaned out. Well, if you're going to run the Security Tango, it may take a lot longer. Run the Security Tango, get your machine clean, get it absolutely all backed up, nice and pretty, squared away nice and pretty with an antivirus and all of that stuff. And then create that recovery CD and put it in a safe place, because you never know when you're going to need it. It's a simple reality. They make very reliable computers. They make very reliable hard drives. But as with anything, they make 100 billion of them. Some of them are going to fail right out of the box. Some of them are going to fail within a week. Some of them are going to fail within a month.
It's just
some
the way
of them will last 20 years.
Yeah, the mean time between failure.
Right.
One of them failed in a day. One of them lasted 20 years.
Right.
So the mean time is what? 18 years?
18 years, somewhere along there, yeah. But you need to be aware that you may get the bad one. You know, that doesn't mean the manufacturing process is bad. It just means that stuff happens. And so you need to be prepared, and the way you're prepared is to make that recovery CD. All those of you listening to Soundbites right now who have not made that recovery CD, now is your shot. Go for it. All right, back to the phones with Don. Don, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Hilton.
And how are things in Hilton?
Well, right now it's quite nice. Sun is shining. Well, not shining as bright as it was a couple minutes ago.
Hey, this is Rochester. We get an average of 56 days of sunshine a year, and don't you forget it, mister.
And it's snowing here in Greece, so I don't know if it's moving north or south.
All right. What's your question, Don?
Well, I started losing my emails on my computer, so I ran the Security Tango. In fact, to be on the safe side, I ran it twice.
Nice.
And I'm still losing my emails. I've lost some very important ones that I didn't think to set my emails for backup. Now I'm backing up my emails. But
right.
So is this old?
Is there some setting I'm doing wrong in my Outlook Express?
Are these new ones or old ones?
Old ones. Well, some of them are a couple weeks old, and some of them I put in a specially saving file. And now I'm copying my Outlook, those Outlook files.
Yeah, there is a setting in Outlook to auto-archive. I think the default is every 2 weeks, where it deletes Well, it archives mail that's older than 2 weeks and sets it off in another folder and then deletes it from your main folder. And the intent there was to keep your Outlook mailbox from filling up. And the annoyance is that you might not want to have it archived every 2 weeks. So there may be an archive.pst somewhere on your hard drive that is those older files, if this is what's happening, if it's the auto-archive.
Well, I'll do a search and see for PST files.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might want to also look into the possibility of, down the road, once you get this straightened out, moving over to Thunderbird.
In fact, that might even be something to try now. Thunderbird may find those files.
Yeah.
If it's
import
the
them all
what's
in.
What is it? The inbox repair tool.
Yep.
There's an inbox repair tool for Outlook that will try to repair the mailboxes because that mailbox can get corrupted and it will appear as if messages are disappearing.
Well, I went to find the files, when they disappeared, and it showed the brand new ones, that had been generated that day that didn't have anything in them.
Yep. So that it could be that there's damage to that PST file, and Outlook created a new one for you.
Yeah, well, it did all of them, including news groups.
Yeah. So, you can run the inbox repair tool, which is scanpst.exe. And that will try to repair your inbox and bring your messages back. Or you can install something like Thunderbird, which will convert all of your mail from Outlook, and it may find all those messages that Outlook can't find now.
If I go to Thunderbird, I've got to then figure out all my settings.
It should read all the settings from Outlook for you.
Yeah.
Then I'll look into it.
Yeah, it pulls in all the folders. It'll pull in the username and the whole nine yards. It's sweet.
The one thing it may not remember is the email password. And that's another thing to put next to your recovery disks and your Windows product code is your email password.
Because
your email program remembers it for you, and if you ever move computers or move to another program, you need that password back again. I don't know how many times people have told me I don't have a password. Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the computer's remembering it for you, but you have one.
Oh, I hit that all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I used to not keep it stored so I can remember it. I had to use it every time.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wish it wouldn't do is remember your password. There's a preference in there on the Mac and Windows. You can say don't remember the password, so you have to type it every time. That way it sort of forces you to remember it.
Yeah, but people are very lazy, and they like to have it done automatically.
Well, you're talking to one of them right now who's very lazy.
We're all guilty of it.
I tell you, I had a lot of fun running the security tangle. I mean, it took me over 24 hours to run it twice.
And it's not fast anymore. It used to be fairly fast, but the problems are tougher, and the malware writers are much more sophisticated. And so the Tango has gotten more and more involved and sophisticated itself, so it takes longer to run. There's no shortcut for that.
Yeah.
The shortcut is to not get infected, but that's almost impossible to do when you're running Windows.
But my only problem was I had some problems finding on your website, finding the security tangle. It wasn't obvious how to get there.
Well, it's because it's on its own website now at securitytango.com.
Oh, okay. But it'd be nice if it was on Soundbites.
There's a link to
telling
it.
Telling me how to find it.
Yeah, it's two or three clicks deep to get a link to it.
I can't put everything on the front page. I wish I could.
I spent a good half hour finding it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I wish I could put everything on the front page, but I kind of can't.
It was somehow the only way I found it is, and it said in order to buy and to order it on a disk if you had a slow, and through that I found the site.
Okay, thanks. It is on the it is.
It is buried a bit.
Yeah, it is buried a bit. All right, thank you.
And to me, it's one of the nicest things you have. I mean, I like your site, but. As I said, it was a little hard to find. And the other thing I found hard to find, it wasn't obvious how to get to where you list all the free software packages that you tell about. I went to, the connection thing and several places, and it wasn't easy to find either. So you might want to take another look at your site.
Okay, that's on the links. I guess so. I don't quite know what to do with that.
I
understand everybody wants everything on the front page, and the thing you're talking about is the number five thing on the links.
They won't scroll down.
When I got to the links, it wasn't quite clear on the links.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll check that out. I don't really know what to do at this point. I mean.
Yeah,
I
we put everything on the front page, and then no one will scroll down.
Yeah. Right.
Well.
Well, no. I mean, I understand that.
No,
that
it's
the real problem is if you don't think of the words that I used, finding it is very difficult. I do get that. I do. I just don't know how to make it easier. If somebody's got a suggestion, let me know. And we'll
always
go from there.
Yeah, always open suggestion.
3D Warehouse sent us a tweet that says, love your show. Thank you very much. Glad to hear that.
Who was that?
3D Warehouse.
Mm.
I have 3D Warehouse.
Oh, what
aren't most warehouses
3D?
Wait a minute.
Matter of fact, I miss because I was answering the phones. What was the story with the Buffalo Airport? I missed that part of the conversation.
Last week, he called in about the Buffalo Airport and was having a problem with the website, and we determined it was their fault.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had all the graphics for the airlines were flash graphics and weren't showing up.
Ooh.
So we explained to him that wasn't his fault. It didn't show up for Steve. It didn't show up for me, and there was something wrong with the site.
That.
And they fixed it this week. They're all GIFs now. And so they all show up perfectly fine, and he actually got a letter back from the Buffalo Airport saying thank you for your feedback, and we know this is a problem, and we just moved to a new yada yada, and we're working on it.
And they're going to become members of Jazz 90.1.
I don't know if the Buffalo Airport folks are, but all you Buffalo Airport folks listening, this is your chance. Definitely become a member. Definitely, maybe they could play the show in the airport. Now, there's an idea. While you're waiting for your flight, they could be listening to us. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Have you been wanting a Jazz 90.1 long or short sleeve t-shirt, half-zip fleece, or hooded sweatshirt? The dark navy color with white logo is good-looking and tasteful. And you can find them all at the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org. Wearing Jazz 90.1 apparel makes it easy to let the world know that jazz is your music and Jazz 90.1 is your station for jazz. There's also a navy Jazz 90.1 baseball cap to complete the look. You know, you might find just exactly what you want when you check out the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Love & Cup Bistro and Brews. Love & Cup will be featuring a Valentine's weekend. Love the one you're with at the Love & Cup on Saturday, February 13th and Sunday, February 14th. There will be a 5-course gourmet dinner with several courses and a dessert trio. Chocolates by Hedonist Artisan Chocolates. The Rick Holland Quartet will perform on February 13th and the Rick Holland Little Big Band on February 14th. For more information, you may visit www.loveandcup.com or call 585-292-9940. Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And for those of you listening to us in the Buffalo Airport, if you were on the Delta flight to Atlanta at 1:47 this afternoon, it's been canceled.
See, the great information we just pass on to our listeners. I mean, we're just a wealth of information.
Including the fact that on Thursday, Google updated the Mac beta of its Chrome browser, adding the support for extensions that had previously been available only in a less stable developer build. Also now part of Mac Chrome's beta are bookmark synchronization, improved bookmark and cookie managers, and a task manager for handling the browser's tabs. The latter is useful since Chrome, unlike most rivals, runs each tab as a separate process to prevent browser crashes when one tab stalls. The task manager can be used to monitor Chrome's memory usage. The each tab in its own process approach does consume prodigious amounts of memory, and kill a tab if it's unresponsive. Google first added extension support and bookmark synchronization to a dev channel Mac edition of Chrome in early January. Before that, Chrome for the Mac had lacked important features, including extensions and sync, which were already available in the Windows and Linux editions. Chrome users, of course, can wait for the automatic update, which should have kicked in by now. Or if you're impatient, you can select About Google Chrome from the browser's Chrome menu to check for and then download available updates. Google also patched seven security vulnerabilities in the production edition of Chrome for Windows. Google ranked three of the bugs as high in its severity scoring system. Access to information on those three flaws, as well as the one tag medium, have been blocked by Google, which regularly locks down details until it decides the majority of Chrome users have upgraded to the patched version, which is an interesting way to put that, to do that. What they do is they, a lot of places tell you what the problem is and ask you to update. Chrome asks you to update, and then when enough people have done it that they don't think it's a threat anymore, then they tell you what the problem is.
That's sort of been Apple's security policy. They don't give you details about the security problems they fix because they don't want people to exploit them.
Right. That's the point.
On the Windows side, they're already exploited before Microsoft fixes
them. That is almost always true. One of the four blocked bugs, the one marked medium, is the first that got its finder a cash prize from Google's new bug bounty program. Google awarded researcher Timothy Morgan $500 to inaugurate the Chromium Security Reward Program, but then bumped that up to the maximum of $1,337. 1337. Get it? Leet.
Ooh.
Yeah. When Morgan said he wanted to donate the original bounty to the Haiti Earthquake Relief Fund. Are you a Chrome for Mac user? If so, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And we will talk to you using Chrome, aren't you?
On and off. I've been playing with Chrome. Mostly use Safari on my home machine and mostly use Firefox on my work machine, just so I keep up to date on both of them. So now I suppose on my laptop I should mostly use Chrome.
Probably just doing that.
just so I use them all.
Yeah. I mostly use Chrome everywhere because it's so unbelievably fast.
Especially now with the bookmark syncing is handy. That's always been an annoyance between different browsers, that your bookmarks are never the same.
Yeah. Although I have heard the new version of Opera is ludicrously fast.
And that's a story. Opera is releasing a browser for the iPhone.
Yeah.
And the internet is asking why. Because one of the big things that Apple has said and that has happened many times in the past is they will not approve an application that duplicates Apple's functionality.
Right.
And there's already Safari for the iPhone, so everyone's wondering why Opera's bothering writing Opera for the iPhone, unless they know something we don't, or they're going to make it a test case, and when it gets rejected, they'll sue Apple.
Yeah, probably.
That could be, too, yeah.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Joe. Where are you calling from, Joe?
Holly, New York.
Holly, New York. How are things in Holly, New York?
Beautiful. No snow.
Where is Holly, New York?
Oh, come on. Just west of Rockport.
Yeah, I used to have
friends. I know where Holly, New York.
I had a friend that lived on the canal in Holly. We used to go there all the time. And
right on the canal?
Yeah.
In a houseboat?
I
always wanted to live in a houseboat. Yep. All right, what's your question, Joe?
My friend at work, his wife put Windows Live Mail on her computer.
Oh, here we go.
And
my friend
what?
At work.
Yep.
The contacts,
yeah.
No, not at work, at her home computer. But he's at work, and he says, my wife's giving me trouble. And I'm going, I'm sorry to hear that. And he says, she put Windows Live Mail on our computer, and the contacts keep disappearing. Now, it's a webmail program. I did a little research on it. But, they have, like, Verizon DSL. And I said, you already got a webmail program. Why would you want another one? And apparently, as I researched out there, Windows Live Mail, the contacts just disappear. Any thoughts on that?
No, we have been seeing it. Yeah. It's happening to a lot of people.
Use Thunderbird.
And one of the reasons people like using Windows Live Mail is it gives you an email address not tied to your ISP. So if you have a Comcast or Frontier or Roadrunner, if you switch ISPs, your email address changes. So using a site like Google or Yahoo or Live, you get an email address not tied to the ISP, so you can switch your internet providers. And in fact, you can use email without ever subscribing to an internet provider, going to friends or libraries or public computers. You
right.
can still have email.
Same thing as Yahoo, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a free webmail. And
yep, and Google and Hotmail and a lot of other services as well.
But I haven't heard of any real fix why they're disappearing. Because apparently they're stored on a server at Microsoft, maybe.
Yeah. And well, it from what we're hearing, it sounds like a programming error at Windows Live Mail, and they'll have to fix it at their end.
Wonderful.
It is a Windows Live Mail issue, and it's a known Windows Live Mail issue.
And they just got their new Windows 7 computer, and I'm just fine with my XP.
One of the annoyances, but I can sort of understand, is that Windows 7 does not come with any email programs, and that's probably a concession to the monopoly courts, that if they included one email program, they need to include them all. So they don't include any, and mm-hmm. you decide what to download.
Well, I think glad you're still on the air. I'm a member supporter now.
Thanks.
Keep
Thank
up
you.
The good work.
Thank
that's
you.
What we like to hear. Now, one thing you might want to try.
Okay.
Is make sure that you are up to the latest updates for Windows Live Mail.
Yeah, I saw that. I told him to do that, and he hasn't got back to me, but I just figured I'd get to the experts that might know a little more.
Also, yeah, that's the only thing that would really fix it.
Also look into Thunderbird.
No, but that's on your computer, right?
Yeah, Thunderbird mm-hmm. downloads all the mail to your computer. Yes. And that's another advantage of using a webmail, is that you can see all your mail on someone else's computer, too.
Yeah.
That goes back to the storage is being done by the
mm-hmm.
Right. mail company, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's sort of the olden days of the internet, what we call pop mail, is you would dial into your internet provider, download your mail, and then hang up, because it cost you money per minute to be on the internet.
Remember,
so you wanted to download everything to your computer and then hang up so there's no more charge.
And then you would turn around and open up those emails, respond to them.
Fill up your outbox.
Log back in. It would then upload any of those responses for your emails, and then you could turn around and download any new stuff.
Right. We used to call it, we had a program for the Frog Pond called Blue something.
Oh, yeah.
Can't remember what it was called.
I want to say Bluebird, but I don't think that's right.
No, Blue something. I don't remember what it was. Yeah. But yeah, those are the kind of things that are good for that. That's, you know, that's why a lot of people use Yahoo Mail or Windows Live Mail or Google Mail or whatever, because it gives them, as Steve said, an independent email address that will never change no matter what else happens, and also gives them that off-site storage and all of that other stuff. But you then run into the vagaries of the people who write the software that you're using to access your mail.
And that was stepping back into time.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
You too. Have fun.
The old days of the BBSs and Shareware and FidoNet.
Yep.
And all those days. I mean, you know, that's why sometimes, you know, folks will sit there and complain, oh, my speed is so slow. No.
I had to start on a 300 baud acoustic coupler. You dialed your rotary phone. You mm-hmm. listened for the screech in your ear, and then you put it in the cups.
Going back to the old days.
I was so angry when I got a 2400 baud modem, because I had written my own email program in Forth, my own bulletin board system program in Forth,
mm-hmm.
and I could read all the posts that went by at 1200 baud. It was easy to do. 2400 baud, I sometimes missed a line. So I had to rewrite my entire program to save all that stuff out to disk, and then I would just rip through them and then log off and read them offline
on
my own.
But here's the other thing folks are missing, and a lot of folks are missing this. Back in the day when we started this, there was not the graphical interface with what we have now. When you dialed into a FidoNet, even CompuServe, all it was black screen and either green or gold or white text.
Yep.
And you clicked in an answer and hit it, and then a menu would all of a sudden, you see, come rolling down on your screen. You'd select one of those, wait a few seconds, and it would populate that. It was not this quick click, boom, there. it was a heck of a lot slower. So, you know, when you sit there and complain about your speed sometimes, I wish there was a way to step back and go to, like, the old modem dial-up. Well, some folks still do. The old FidoNets and that.
Every now and then we'll go to a customer that's still using dial-up.
Oh, yeah, I've got the dial-up.
It's so painful.
It really is.
But even then, trying to load a web page and Flash, it's terrible.
But just to take them back to the days of when it was just all text, not the graphics that we have nowadays. I mean, that's an eye-opener.
Well, I know some people who actually, you know, they turn off the graphics in their web browser, which means they don't even download them. So it's faster. It's a faster web browsing experience. Not as rich, but certainly usable. I know a couple of people who run Lynx, L-Y-N-X, which is actually a text mode browser. You go into a command line and run it from there, and that makes it very fast.
Yeah, I was at a customer this week that their medical billing program still uses Procom. It dials in to a terminal server.
Prometheus.
And it used a Kermit upload to submit the insurance claims. I mean, and I'm trying to remember my AT commands. What's the AT command to turn the speaker volume up?
Right?
Yeah. Whoa. ATM1L3. I remembered.
That's right. Very good.
And then I found out that this new USB modem doesn't have a speaker in it.
Well, you could even do like M1, M2, M3, depending on the loudness that you want it.
Yeah. How loud you want it to be, how long you want it to be on.
Low, medium, and then loud.
Yeah.
Right here.
I used to use most a 300 baud modem, a 1200 baud modem, 2400 baud, 14.4.
Yeah, people don't like hearing the screech, but we use the sound of the screeching to tell where the problem is.
Yeah,
right.
And didn't you say you had a friend that could screech back?
My friend Chuck could actually had a perfect pitch. Oh, CR had that. And when the modems would screech at him, he could tell whether it was 1200, 2400, whatever, and he would screech back.
And whistle back
and get a carrier detect. And then sit there going. And who knows what they were getting at their end? I don't know. You know, who knows?
Oh, I mean, well.
God, we're old.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're dating ourselves a little bit.
We've got 100 years of computing experience between us.
Yeah. I mean. I remember first meeting Nick. It was actually at the PC Cube meeting.
That's right.
We were there, and
back in the day when instead of spending all your time on the internet, you actually got out of the house and went and met other computer people.
A social network.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, we'd sit there and got together, going in different groups and that, met each other there.
That's why when I started the Frog Computer Society, it was pretty cool because Frogs had the Osborne One computer. The Frog stood for First Rochester Osborne Group, and... The Osbornes actually had handles on them.
They were portable.
Yes. As I used to say, if you were Lou Ferrigno, they were portable. You know, they looked like the Hulk's lunchbox. but they had a handle on it. People would lug them to the meetings if they needed help with something, and we would help them right there. We'd demonstrate stuff and show things, and people would crowd around the 12-inch black and green monitor
five
to see what was there.
The Osborne One.
Built-in was 5-inch, but we used to have an external 12-inch.
Somebody
would lug it in,
Listen, I'll tell you what. That machine for its day, it had a Z80 processor in it.
At a screaming 4 megahertz.
4 megahertz processor. It had a full 64K of RAM, a full 64K. It came with WordPerfect. It came with a whole bunch of software, essentially an office suite. Word processor, spreadsheet, database.
Wasn't it WordStar back then?
It was WordStar and SuperCalc, all of those things. It came with two floppy drives built in.
91K capacity.
Each, mister.
Yep.
And then all of that was $19.95. $2,500 worth of software for $19.95, and they threw in the computer for free, essentially. That's what the deal was. I sold more of those. I couldn't keep them in stock. I sold them left, right, and center for years. God bless Adam Osborne. He put the down payment on my house and bought me a car. I loved that man.
Remember another old program, DBase?
DBase is the database that came with it.
I mean, you had to learn DBase to do programming, as opposed to right now you can get like Microsoft Access.
You wanted to change a printer, in WordStar, you had to actually go into the system and edit the hex codes to add a new printer in. We used to do that all the time for people, man. It was
and adjusting the page length, because if they wanted a margins on the sides, up and bottom and left and right, you actually had to go in and adjust those. Because some folks wanted maybe an inch at the bottom versus, you know, the standard half inch.
Right. And all the dot codes that were available. We loved those machines. They were simple to use, easy to play with. They used to, we also used to sell K-Pros, which were essentially big metal Osbournes. they were pretty neat machines in those days. And I remember when I first started in the business, I could read every computer magazine every month.
Yep.
You used to complain about that with the Star Trek stuff.
Yeah.
You used to be able to follow it all at once. Now there's so much of it, you can't even skim it anymore.
Remember Computer Shopper?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember Computer Shopper when it was only an inch thick.
1,000 pages of ads and 2 articles.
Yep.
I mean, that was, you know, 2 men and a boy to take it home, because it grew to like a couple inches thick. And my mail carrier got to where he'd pull up to the shop when the time of the month that was delivering that, and said, "Here you go," because I'd had all my magazines, and the Computer Shopper would just add that much more bulk to it. He'd just say, "Boom."
I used to love the original Dr. Dobbs Journal of Computer Calisthenics and Orthodontia, running light without overbite. And the whole point of the thing was, how fast can you run a certain algorithm? How few bytes of machine code could you run that thing in? So somebody'd write in, everybody'd have contests. Oh, I got an add command in 2 bytes or 4 bytes or whatever it was. And we used to love that stuff, man. We used to love that stuff.
Wasn't the guy that invented the Altair a dentist? What was his name?
Yeah, I used to know it too. It doesn't matter. I don't remember his name. Listen, we're going to take a quick break take our vitamins and our Geritol, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That is, of course, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 accepts vehicles. That's right. You can donate your unwanted vehicle to Jazz 90.1, have it picked up, and receive a tax deduction while we get cash to keep the jazz going strong on Jazz 90.1. If you would like to support Jazz 90.1 by donating your old vehicle, call 966-5299. That's 966-5299. Donating your old vehicle, another way to support Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
If you've made home improvements by adding energy-efficient insulation, windows, and heating and cooling systems, you can claim 30% of the cost, up to $1,500 combined for 2009 and 2010. And if you haven't made any improvements in 2009, you can still make them through 2010 and claim them on next year's return. A second credit is available for alternative energy equipment like solar electric systems and geothermal heat pumps, but they have to be certified. A public service message from the New York State Society of Certified Public Accountants.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton. Do you have a comment or suggestion for Jazz 90.1? Call our feedback phone today at 966-2407. That's 966-2407. Be heard at Jazz 90.1.
I love jazz, so I spend an outrageous amount of time listening to Jazz 90.1. It's my way to stay in the loop with the local jazz scene and the local musicians. And I love the specialty programs. They're programs that I cannot find anywhere else. With Jazz 90.1's Facebook and MySpace pages, I can listen in and stay tuned in with the local jazz scene from my computer and my phone, too. I jump in on the exclusive contests and chat up with people who believe in the music. You can, too. Visit jazz901.org and click on the icons to visit Jazz 90.1's Facebook and MySpace pages. That's how I take jazz further, with Jazz 90.1.
When I was a kid, when I was listening to the radio all the time, it was like a portal to the world for me. You know, I grew up in a small town in Georgia, and, you know, it's like a connection to the outside world, you know, it was a special thing.
New artist Tim Brantley loves radio because it connects every day. Radio, always on, always free, always something new. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we have Don on the line. Don, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Hilton, and I thought I would share with you some of the reminiscence about early computers.
Sure.
I used to buy computers for Kodak, computers and calculators. The first electronic calculator we bought was about the size of a big typewriter, and it was cost $1,000, and we thought it was very cheap because it was replacing mechanical calculators, which cost about $1,700. And so that was there. But the other thing is, the very first memory I bought for computers for running some of our machines cost $4 a byte, not a kilobyte, $4 a byte, which means that the memory I have in my little cell phone would have cost over $16 billion if there had been that much memory in the world. So I thought maybe you might find some of those things interesting. First disk drives I bought cost $15,000 and were only 32K.
Yep. Oh, back in the day, I had a friend who was an accountant, and every year he bought a $400 calculator. The first one barely had four functions on it. And now, of course, you couldn't buy a $400 calculator with a gun to your head.
No.
You had them all lined up behind him.
You know, you find those things kind of interesting.
Yep.
This was a very nice calculator because it had one memory in it, which made doing statistics a lot easier than it was. Because with the mechanical ones, you had to write down all the numbers and then re-enter them.
Yep, excellent.
I just thought you'd find that interesting.
You did very much.
As I said, a 32K disk drive.
Yep. Yep. And you were glad to get it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because the computers would only, I think, only address, I think, 8K. So you had to do a lot of swapping. Now, it was a very fast disk drive. It had a head for every track on the drive.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that would be fast.
So, you know, your latency was, average latency was just one half a revolution.
Right. Excellent.
I just thought you'd find a bit of worthless trivia.
I love that, Don. Thanks so much. Thank you very much. All right. Excellent. Excellent stuff. But now, that's it, kiddies. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with the new, improved, and cleaner-mouthed Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Dave.
Oh. Listen, Lucy Lou.
Better.
You got to come out of, you know, selective hearing. Now, what I mean by that is, when you ask for a quote of our systems, yes, I will tell you, our systems come with a 3-year warranty. That is a complete system. Now, when you come in and ask us, oh, my DVD drive is broken, can you replace it? And I go ahead and do that. And all right, now a year and some odd months have gone by, and your 3-year-old was around the computer and decided that they were playing with the front buttons, and that looked like a nice little seat to sit on when it popped out.
No.
Yes. She was playing with the buttons and it popped out and she turned around and sat on it. So this is covered under warranty, right? I go, no.
Yeah, no.
Well, wait a minute. You said it's 3-year warranty. I said on a complete system, not on just an individual piece of equipment.
Accidental abuse or intentional abuse.
And a child sitting on it. Hello. That's not the coffee tray. You know, we've seen different ads.
Right, the coffee cup and all that.
Yeah, I guess the kid thought this was kind of cool because the computer was off to the side, she said. And she sat down on it to sit there and be with mommy. And the thing came in and it was bent down. And it's like, no. Sorry, it's not covered. Well, it was 3-year. No, that's on the full system. I'm sorry, you're going to have to pay for another drive. They're not that expensive. But, you know, it's not covered. Don't expect me to. And, you know, these warranties. Matter of fact, I was talking to a friend over in England.
we think we got it bad here. You know, you usually can take stuff back. Or if you go into a store and say you see a display model. My friend Lukey was saying over there in England, there are big chain stores there. If you see a display model, usually around here, you can talk to people and talk them down in the price. No, over there, whatever the price is, even if it's been used for months, you still pay the full price.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, so folks, you know, take a little more care in your equipment. Because some of these folks, they literally eat their meals over it. I mean, we have now big jars of the sanitizers because of the stuff going mm-hmm. around. I mean, the food and that we see.
And the crud and how dirty they get. And
oh, we had one screen that looked like they were licking it to death.
Yeah. It probably was a pet. A dog, you know, a dog.
Could be, yeah. But you know, I mean, they sit there and they get mad at it. And I had another one that they pounded down on the laptop and popped a couple of the keys off.
Yep.
And sometimes, yeah, you're lucky enough that you can snap them back in, depending on how angry they get at it. But this one, we literally had to order a new keyboard. To get a keyboard for laptops is anywhere between $75 and $100.
Laptops, nothing is cheap.
On a laptop, matter of fact, for a little netbook like yours, yep. The guy had one come in. He accidentally sat on it. He was moving over in his car seat from one seat sliding over, and the netbook was there, and he accidentally sat on it, cracked it. Well, that's, you know, another $100 to $175, depending on the model, to replace it. Yes, they're not, because, well, it shouldn't be that much. They're only $200-$300, yes, as a complete unit. But when you start buying parts, you're going to pay extra.
Robots are cheaper than people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they're right. Going along the same.
Robots can build them, but people have to fix them.
Yep. Yeah. We had a kid buy an iPod, take it home, and ride his bicycle over it, and it broke. And he came back to get it replaced. Well, what do you mean get it replaced? It's broken. Well, yeah. Well, I just bought it. I want it replaced. But you rode your bicycle over it. Why'd you do that? I wanted to see if it would break. Well, it did.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. You now have a broken iPod. Well, I want another one. Give us more money. You broke it. That's not warranty.
Right. Yeah. All right, kiddies. That's it. We're going to give Uncle Dave a shot, put him on the shelf. Although he was really very calm this
week. He's got new medicine.
I'm better drugs.
That's right. Uncle Dave's on better drugs.
Better living
now.
Through synthetic chemicals.
That's the best kind.
No, I said medicine, you know.
right.
All the drugs we take are legal.
Yes.
Are what?
Legal.
Legal. Start it with the L.
Legal.
Yeah, exactly.
I like going to Boston and having legal seafood. I'm always the jerk that asks for the illegal seafood.
Yeah, you would be. I mean, really?
Well, you know what the difference between illegal and legal is?
20 years of law.
No, one is a sick bird.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That's possibly the first one of those.
They do that at air shows, too. You look for the GU-11. Yeah, there's a whole squadron of GU-11s flying over.
Yeah, right.
and you can always tell the newbies because they're looking.
Because they're looking.
And the rest of us are just snickering.
They're behind the gulls over there. Yeah. Exactly. But, yeah, we have seen that a lot over the years. You know, you got to read your warranty. You got to understand your warranty. Warranties don't cover.
Yeah.
Well, they certainly don't cover malicious damage like I took it home and rode my bike over it. But they also don't necessarily cover unusual damage. Sitting on it is considered unusual.
Unintended purposes.
Well, yeah. Holes.
Well, the other
considered
thing.
Considered unusual. You may not consider that unusual. They do.
Well, I think I've told this story, you know, a number of times before, and some of our listeners might not have heard it. But, you know, get folks bring it in and say it was in water damage or, you know, a fire. And they say, well, you know, I want to get a new one. Well, you know, I can tell you what's going to well, just tell the insurance company is beyond repair.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things, too.
No.
If the machine isn't covered by warranty for accidental abuse, you drop it, it breaks. It may be covered by insurance, but then you've got your premium to consider and you've got your rate increase to consider.
Yes, and those things. And no, don't bother asking me to, you know, lie for you. For all I know, you could be 60 minutes sitting outside in my driveway waiting to come in and bust on me because, oh, I'm going to go ahead and falsify stuff for you. No, your machine is not worth me going to jail. Sorry.
Right.
It just ain't going to happen. And that's why I have the reputation with the insurance companies that they know they're going to get an honest answer.
Right.
You know,
right.
Well, it got a power surge. I don't know that. Well, can't you tell? Sometimes, no.
All yeah, that's tell, the truth. Sometimes you can't tell.
Yeah, and there are no surges or anything.
A melted power supply is a pretty good indication of a surge.
Yes. Beyond that, however, yeah. It could be a mystery.
Yeah. Or like that other one that I had just a couple of weeks that I talked about that wanted me to replace the capacitors on the motherboard because they had literally heated up so much they literally exploded and melted over onto the board. Well, it's just you wanted me to solder new ones on it. No. Because if it doesn't work, then, you know, which I knew it wouldn't because the acid had already spilled out on the board.
What's going to be next?
It's not going to be covered. You know, and they want you to warranty it. No. Nope.
I sometimes get people asking me, can I have this piece of software? You know, can you put this software on here for me? Do you own a legal copy of it? Well, no, but that's not important. Yeah, actually it is.
Yeah.
It's the single most important piece. I you know what? If you want to be a thief, that's your business. Don't ask me to be one. Yeah. I don't appreciate it. It's not polite.
And we can probably find you a free version of something that's similar through the open source community.
Well, we were talking about that last night. Yeah. Talking about, you know, where can I get a cheap copy of Office? Well, you don't need a cheap copy of Office. You can have a free copy of OpenOffice. For 99% of the population, it does everything you need.
Yep.
I share documents all day with Windows users, word processing, spreadsheet, presentation packages. They all work perfectly across platforms. I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And OpenOffice is free.
Mm-hmm.
Why not give it a try?
Yeah.
If you don't like it, what have you lost? A couple of days?
Yeah.
It's free.
Yeah, you know, and it does everything. And you won't know the difference. I have had so many folks, you know, turned on to that. And they go, well, how good can it be for free? I said, what do you got to lose to try it out?
The best things in life are free.
And I mean, the worst you're going to save is, maybe $300-$400.
$20, same as in town. No, different joke.
Different joke. Oh, man. And we were kind of on a level. We had gotten kind of lofty. We were just, you know, in that we had taken off. We were just beginning to level off at a high altitude. All of a sudden,
yep.
Steve. So, all right, that's it. We're stopping.
And
the
with
show.
That, we're gonna.
That's exactly it.
On
Steve
that
gets
note.
The last joke. We're gonna stop the show now because we're also very horribly disappointed at that. So we're gonna stop the show. That's it for this week. We will be back next week with a whole brand new edition. And hopefully Steve will have learned a clean joke. One clean joke for next week. That's your homework. An actual clean joke, not a double entendre. It's clean joke. A clean joke. We'll be back with more of Soundbites next week. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. Each and every one of you, we want to sincerely thank you all for listening and joining in on the conversation on Twitter and on the IRC chat and everywhere else. On the longest-running computer show in the known universe, we are Soundbites right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. George is coming in with German music. It's going to be phenomenal. Stick around and tap your feet. See you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.